Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to Jewel Says. I'm Julie Jules. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I hope you enjoy the podcast, and if you do, I hope you share, rate, review. I really appreciate your support. Lately, I've been listening to a podcast called The Slumflower Hour. I'm always recommending something. It was created by British best-selling author, presenter, award-winning blogger, and social commentator Chidera Egeru. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I actually looked for videos on how to pronounce her name, and I could never see anything where they actually introduced her with her full name. So if I've mispronounced it, I'm sorry. But anyway, if you listen, and even if you don't feel comfortable following all her advice, which doesn't apply to me anyway now as I'm not out there dating, she certainly makes some very compelling points on subjects such as knowing your value, the ways that men control women, how too many of us view even the smallest shreds of anything a man does for us as worthy of excessive reciprocation. Oh, he's so nice. He did this thing for me. But meanwhile, it wasn't that big a deal. The Slumflower Hour is usually a stream of thought. It's just her talking, and she's so good at it. But she had Catherine on a recent episode, which is how I started listening to her. And something she talked about recently that resonated with me was women's low expectations of men, a lot of women's low expectations of men. And I know a lot of men would disagree with that. Oh, my woman expects. I don't know what your situation is, but I think Chidera has a point. Take me, for example. Even though now, in my old age, I am much, much better with setting boundaries, come to think of it, I have been pretty good, even when I was young, in certain situations at saying no or articulating when someone was behaving unacceptably. But I will say, though, that I am not the kind of person to fight. I am not a yeller. And I do not expect or demand anything really from anyone. In fact, I'm actually quite uncomfortable when someone does something really generous for me. And not just men, even my children. For example, Catherine makes a lot more money than I do, and she gives me the most unbelievably beautiful gifts. And I have to remind myself that if I had the means, I would have done so much more for my own mother. But it's really hard for me to accept that level of generosity, because I can never reciprocate. And I would never demand anything from anyone. Demanding smacks of entitlement to me. You know, there are nuances to some of these words, but to me, demand smacks of entitlement. And I'm not even comfortable asking anyone for anything, which is ridiculous. For example, I've been with Abe now for over 20 years, and only recently very recently, I might ask him to reach for something in the kitchen on a high shelf in the cupboard, rather than getting the stool or climbing up on the counter to get it myself. And sometimes when he sees me grab the stool or start to climb, he says, "Why didn't you just ask me? I'm right here." And if I do ask, I tend to back it up with an explanation. "Would you mind reaching that thing for me, or should I just get the stool because I can't reach it with the stool?" Something like that. And sometimes I'll ask something like, "Do you want to do this or should I do that?" And he'll cut me off at the "or." He doesn't like "or" questions. And I've thought about why I do this. And I think I've come to the conclusion that it's because deep down, I instinctively don't feel comfortable asking anyone for anything, so I include a justification, which probably isn't necessary and can be a bit annoying. But on the plus side, I also don't expect people to read my mind. I do know some people won't ask for what they want, but then they get angry if the person hasn't anticipated what they might want or if the person hasn't read their mind, which isn't fair. So when I think about this, I go toward the question, how did I become someone who will ask for almost nothing? Why does asking make me so uncomfortable? I don't know. But I have to say, even though I do see the Slum Flowers points as I listen to her podcast, when it comes to her valuing herself enough to expect pretty significant, tangible generosity, I just couldn't. I wouldn't have it in me. Now, I'm not saying she's wrong. I'm just saying this is how I am. And I think a lot of women are like that too. Maybe men are like that too. Even small things, inconsequential things. I know plenty of women who would go out for drinks and maybe pay for their first drink. And after that, some man or men in the bar would buy them drinks. I was never comfortable with that either, as an example. Back in the day, if someone bought me a drink, I declined. One time the bartender said, "But I already poured it," and I gave him a few options because I did learn to say no early on. But a lot of times people don't respect the no. If you say no to a man, he's probably not going to back off unless you say, "I'm married" or "I have a boyfriend." And I've done that in the past too. "I'm married. Where's your wedding ring?" "Well, my wedding ring wasn't fancy, so people didn't recognize it as such." It's shut up. Don't do that. I said no. I shouldn't have to have a husband or give you a reason or justify it. But anyway, I would say to the bartender, "You can send the drink to someone else. You can drink it yourself. You can pour it down the drain. But I will not accept drinks from strangers." The reason is that I'm just wary that if someone does even the slightest thing for me, they'll think I owe them. Or maybe deep down, it's because I think I'll owe them. And that's really what it is, this fear of being indebted to someone. No. Back in the day when I first started dating the girl's father, he took me out for dinner and to the theater in Detroit to see a stage production of Evita. That was a huge deal to me. I was overwhelmed that someone would do something so grand for me. It made me feel simultaneously special and undeserving. Mind you, this wasn't too long after I had ended it with the dude who I paid my share with pretty much right down to the dollar. That guy was really cheap. And I didn't mind paying my share, of course, but in retrospect, with the huge discrepancy in our incomes, maybe prorating my share would have been a little more equitable. But then, this exotic, charming, European/Irish man, that was exotic for Sarnia, was taking me out to dinner and a play in Detroit. Oh my God, why? My friends tried to reassure me that this was normal, that it was okay to accept such lavish attention from a man. And as the Slum Flower says, why shouldn't a man be generous with you if he has the generosity of your attention, your company, and maybe intimate access to your body, which is what he's after anyway? And my first date with Abe was over 20 years ago, dinner and a comedy show with another couple. I viewed it at the time as not really a date because I could not understand why this lovely, hardworking, good-looking, intelligent 23-year-old man, who was my work colleague, was wasting a Friday night in my company. Me, a 39-year-old divorcee with three children. And then he paid for dinner, which made me very uncomfortable. So I kind of was like, oh, shit, now what am I supposed to do? I think I made a joke about, well, I hope you don't think this means I'm having sex with you, because I'm not. But then I did tell him that I would have to reciprocate and take him out for dinner, which I did something like 3 weeks later. But the whole situation was really uncomfortable for me, and I think maybe that's unusual. Then today I saw some comment, I think it was on Instagram, about trad moms, which I guess is this traditional stay-at-home mother movement, and a few things jumped out at me. First of all, these trad moms are clearly influencers, often, if not always, with links to monetization opportunities, like a subscription or merch. One comment pointed out the $15,000 stove in one of the mummy's videos. Did her beloved husband buy that? Or is that from the proceeds of the influencer career she's crafted while hypocritically telling women they should submit and serve their man and not earn the money? Don't get me wrong. I think having a house spouse to look after you and the family is a generous gift to the family, and all that work, whether you're doing it full-time or trying to work it in around your paying job, has been historically dismissed and undervalued. Being a traditional stay-at-home mom is a perfectly valid choice, a choice I would have been afraid to make, but a choice. However, if you're actively raising your daughter to be a submissive servant to her husband, you're raising her to believe she doesn't really have a choice, which I think is dangerous. Because that might work if you have the kind of husband who won't take advantage of your financial dependence, but what if he isn't equitable with the money? Or what if he's emotionally or physically abusive? We've all heard stories about men who hide the money assets, who consider that money to be theirs and theirs alone because they earned it, who maybe drink or gamble the money while the children go without. Well, the trad moms say, the solution to that is to marry the right man. Duh, don't we all think we're marrying the right man at the time? The generosity that a man might show you while you're dating often stops as soon as you're married, because now he can relax. You've married him, he's comfortable. He has you now, so he doesn't have to share. He doesn't have to be generous or even be kind to you, because he owns you. That's the risk. But you have to trust Julie. Well, I guess I have trust issues then. I would rather pay the bills myself so I can trust that they'll be paid. I would rather do for myself than ask someone else to do anything for me. I would far rather make a living myself than trust that someone else is going to make sure I'm not destitute. So I'm grateful that I have the choice to do those things. Women who are not much older than I am did not have that choice when they were young. They were forced to quit when they got married, or if not when they got married, certainly they were forced to quit when they got pregnant. Oh, we can't have customers seeing a pregnant woman. And not only that, even if you're working. For my first 10 to 15 years in the workforce, I barely made enough to support myself, never mind a family. And I worked with people who said, oh, if a man needed my job, I would quit so a man could have my job. Really? Well, guess what? A man doesn't want your job, because we're doing quote-unquote woman's work. That was before my IT days. But even when I had jobs in IT, for years my pay was below the bottom of the salary range. So the choice can't just exist. You're more likely to believe you have the choice if you're raised to believe you have a choice. Women who were raised to believe that their place is only in the home, to defer to their husband, are very likely to do just that, even if it puts them in a vulnerable or even a dangerous position. I know several women who've been there. And even now, at age 64, I really don't feel as though not earning money is an option. My current contract is with a company which wants to save money, so I'm actually not working full-time, which is perfect for me right now. But I have to say, I feel guilty about it. But since I'm an independent consultant, the income that I bill the company goes into our corporation, the corporation that is jointly owned by Abe and me, and the corporation pays me less than I bring in. And because Abe is now an employee with a pretty good salary, which is taxed at source, he's paying the majority of the household expenses. Even though this arrangement will benefit Abe over the long run, he is an owner of this corporation, and I'm still bringing money into it, I feel guilty about it. For the first time in my entire life, I am not directly paying for half the household expenses, and it makes me very uncomfortable, which I know is completely irrational. But I'm sure it's because I've internalized my reluctance for anyone to do anything for me so deeply over the years that it's just there, gnawing at the pit of my being, and I don't think it's ever going to leave. Could I have been a happy house spouse? I don't know if that ever would have been possible given my fear of poverty and my trust issues. I suppose if I had married a very wealthy man, or even a reasonably wealthy man, who seemed to genuinely want and appreciate a house spouse, I might have been able to do it, because I sincerely did love raising my children, and I like looking after my house. I love doing crafts and sewing, all the sort of traditional things that I guess you could classify as feminine domesticity. After all, I was raised in a traditional society, and my mother believed if a wife decided to get a job and earn extra income, that should strictly be for extras for her or the household or the family, and that the husband should provide for all the necessities. That's how I was raised. So maybe I could have done it if circumstances had been different. We will never know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Another thing that caught my attention this week was an article about mums who commodify their children's images. The pictures they post of their children attract unsavory pedo attention. To you and me, the pictures might seem innocent enough. Often these little ones are just shown modeling dancewear or maybe swimwear. I follow a friend's dance studio and admire all of their talented dancers. But the description of some of these pics and the comments. This article didn't show the pictures because their goal was to protect the children, but some of the descriptions were like this. 9-year-old girl lounging in a golden bikini. And some of the comments are, wow, mamma mia, great body, perfect bikini body. Take that bikini off. You're so hot. This is about a 9-year-old. An 11-year-old girl sits under a beach umbrella in red lipstick and a polka dot bathing suit with her legs beneath her in heart-shaped sunglasses and blows a kiss. A 7-year-old faces the camera in athletic shorts and top, doing a standing split in front of a wall of roses and a neon sign reading, "Hello, gorgeous." That reminded me of Carrie when she was 11 or 12. I mean, she wasn't 7. Catherine would have friends over, and Carrie enjoyed attention from the older kids, as you would when you're that age. When you're 11 or 12, you really look up to older teens. And sometimes she would disappear and come downstairs in what we called her tooth fairy dress, which was, it looked like a little princess dress that was, I think, down to her ankles. It was cute. And sometimes she would say, do you want to see what I can do? And she would raise one leg over her head because she was a dancer and could do more than a 180 split. And I told her not to do that in front of people. Why not? I mean, I forget how I explained it, but It's a bit challenging to explain to a little girl who's just a child and still innocent that you never know how some people think. You shouldn't have to worry that people are thinking that about an 11-year-old. Ugh, here's another one. A girl in early adolescence opens a lace robe to reveal a string bikini with ruffles on top. She looks at the camera in heavy eyeshadow, making a kissy face. Some of the comments to that one: I will sleep with you in future, remember my ID. I fall in love with you. I know you will be waiting for me. Love that teen body, yummy. One guy posted, it's like a candy store, heart, heart, heart. God bless Instamoms. And one of the moms who was interviewed said she didn't really want or intend to exploit her daughter, but her numbers are so big. What are you going to do? Just stop it and walk away? Yeah, maybe you have to, because no one else will protect you. The more likes and comments, the more social media clout, the more clothing discounts, the more gifts or even money. Some people only get clothing and gifts, whereas others earn thousands of dollars a month by also selling subscriptions with exclusive content. Some of these subscriptions are $100 a month, $250 a month. Some parents say that their children enjoy being on social media, I'm sure they do, or that it's important for a future career. One mother they interviewed, though, expressed regret now that her daughter, who had spent a lot of her childhood modeling bikinis online for adult men, has written herself off. She's 17. And decided the only way she can make money is on OnlyFans. That's so sad. This mom warns others, saying she didn't realize at the time that she was naively feeding a pack of monsters. Now, I know a lot of people hate regulations. Regulations cost money. They take time. Do we trust the regulators? Not necessarily. So I get all of that. But as long as the world has cheating, dangerous people in it, unfortunately, we need regulations. Social media companies need regulation and oversight. And they keep fighting it every step of the way. Account owners who report explicit images or potential predators are often met with silence. According to this article, companies such as Meta won't do anything about it. Apparently, their spokesperson said that parents are accountable for the posts and they can control who can tag, comment, mention, or message them. When I told Abe about this article, he said, well, isn't that kind of victim blaming? That's like saying women need to stay home to avoid sexual assault. And I get Abe's point. Not too long ago, I read somewhere that some government proposed legislating a curfew for women because there had been so many sexual assaults in the area. And one of the women, they had a few women in their government, countered with the suggestion that the curfew should be imposed upon the men, since the men were doing the sexual assaulting. Maybe the women would feel safe going out at night if the men had a curfew. The same people who suggested a curfew for women in the interest of safety were not prepared to entertain the suggestion that we curtail men's freedom. God forbid. Seems backwards to me. Of course, parents have a responsibility to keep their children safe, and parents who manage these accounts are accountable. But surely these companies have some responsibility? I mean, this is a world where social media apps are ubiquitous, and their tools for advertising, monetization. Is it unreasonable for parents who are not making money but sharing wholesome pictures of their children to expect some protection from pedos? How about companies like the dance school I follow? You know, that's partly how they advertise. And social media company profits are ridiculous. They invest heavily in AI, they invest in algorithms that will enrich their financial bottom line, and their algorithms are obviously sophisticated enough to overhear us and show us ads and direct us to related content, but they can't invest in doing a better job at handling problematic behavior? Death threats? Pedo behavior? I mean, come on. And some of the mums underestimate the danger and almost view it as the cost of doing business. I sometimes wonder, like, do these mums just want their children to be famous, or do they really need the money? I can't imagine, because this didn't exist when I was a mum, a young mum. But here's what surprised me. Apparently, according to this article, You can only block so many times before some of the apps stop you from blocking. This one mother was told she had reached her limit and couldn't block any more followers. And the Meta spokesperson said, well, it's difficult to know why parents encounter problems. Really? You know what I find difficult to know? Why one of the most profitable global organizations in the world can invest in AI and algorithms to maximize profit, but they can't adequately design for safety. Why is this such a challenge for them? Because they don't care. They have the money. Blame the mums all you want. I don't think companies like Meta should be entirely absolved of responsibility for the problem. They don't address the issues because it's not a priority for them. The safety of our children is not a priority. And a lot of small businesses, like that dance school, rely on these platforms for advertising. One owner of a dancewear design company said micro-advertising on these apps has boosted sales significantly more than outfitting a contestant on So You Think You Can Dance. So he suggested that maybe Meta could add the ability to filter by age and sex or other variables to help identify suspicious followers. And of course, many male followers are legit. Dads and grandfathers. Most grown men would never follow a child's account unless they were a close friend or a loved one, or a business connection. After I read this article, of course, the algorithm showed me a post of a young guy telling a story about seeing a man in a Starbucks queue scrolling and zooming in on certain body parts of a child in a swimsuit. This guy didn't even bother trying to be stealth about it in a public coffee shop. And the young guy actually called the creep out on it, which, thank you, we need to do that, called the guy a pedo, and the creep said, "I prefer the term minor attracted." Oh, so you expect us to use a term to legitimize your sick behavior, you sick? And some men wonder why we're angry. Anyway, the guy went off on the pedo, according to his story, who ran out of the coffee shop without getting his coffee, but that isn't going to stop him. Look, I'm rarely on Facebook, but I am regularly on Instagram, even though I know it's all the same company. So much of what we see there is informative. So much of it is uplifting, funny, inspiring. But we need to expect more from these companies. They need to manage the dark side better. Endangering children isn't the only safety issue on these platforms, and they know it. They just don't care. If you have any suggestions for dealing with this, I would be all ears. Thank you for listening. If you have anything you'd like to share, email me at jewelsays@gmail.com. I'll be back next week.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.